I'm Jen Taylor Skinner, and this is The Electorate. On this episode, I have a conversation with Heidi Seek, the co-founder and CEO of Vote Pro-Choice. It's an organization that helps voters elect pro-choice champions. Heidi breaks down the details of anti-choice legislation that's happening all around the country, and she really gets into the weeds about the legal process, the legislative process, and of course, the history of these laws, including breaking down many of the trigger laws that will go into effect if Roe v. Wade is overturned. We also talk about the Mississippi anti-choice bill that's going to be going before the Supreme Court later this year. I learned so much from this conversation with Heidi Seek. So I hope you enjoy this conversation with the co-founder and CEO of Vote Pro-Choice, Heidi Seek.
Heidi Seek, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you. I'm happy to be here. Not totally excited to talk about this subject, but glad to be here.
But I do want to start off with talking about the elephant in the room regarding reproductive justice and what's happened recently in Texas, right? As we know, the decision to have a 6-week abortion ban in Texas, which is essentially just an abortion ban, right? Because no one knows that they're pregnant at 6 weeks. So basically a banned abortion in Texas, the entire state of Texas. And I feel like it's been about a week and a half, maybe 2 weeks. You know, there are some people who are truly anxious about this, like you and I, lots of activists, people on the ground, and especially the women in Texas. But I am nervous that people are going to move on, right, from this in the news cycle. I see it kind of waning. And it's going to spread across the country before it's too late, right? It's going to happen state by state. Am I being kind of, you know, too anxious about this, kind of hyperbolic about it?
Oh, no, you are not being hyperbolic about it at all. As I like to say, this is a constitutional emergency of national importance. So conversations like this could not be more important. And I will say that this Texas bill that was signed into law by Governor Greg Abbott in May, who is, by the way, up for re-election in 2022, and he must be removed, is a 6-week abortion ban, but it is actually more insidious than that. It is an innovation in legislation to circumvent the constitutional protections of Roe. So it's even scarier than your average 6-week abortion ban that's been happening over the course of the last decade. Now, I want to frame this Texas situation in a bigger picture. This is not a new phenomenon of this type of legislation that's trying to prevent people from accessing reproductive health care. This has been going on since the mid-80s. Now, Roe v. Wade was decided in 1973, which provides constitutional access to abortion with some caveats, but it created that perspective of a trimester. So it's abortion up until viability, which is around 24 weeks. That has been constitutional protected access since 1973. However, since around the mid-80s, the Republican Party, particularly like the Reagan Republicans, decided that they needed to find a lever for a particular kind of evangelical, white supremacist, super conservative that they needed to keep connected to the Republican Party in order for them to win elections and to build power. So they figured out that abortion was the thing. And since the mid-80s, they have been funding an extraordinary amount of money into infrastructure to allow for this small group of people. This is roughly 18 to 20% of the electorate that has been given outsized power because of this investment in infrastructure. And what do I mean by that? There's protest infrastructure. There is leadership development in colleges and youth groups. There are templated pieces of legislation. There is support for campaigns in down ballot races that has been going on for 30 years. And more insidiously is the recruitment and the placement of federal justices that are extremely conservative. So what we're seeing now is the fruition of this investment. So this law is one of 1,000. The overly funded anti-choice minority have been introducing pieces of legislation like this since the early 90s. I was working in the Nebraska unicameral in 1992 when this first started. What these pieces of legislation do is try to find ways around the constitutional protection of Roe to prevent people from accessing abortion. And they've evolved over time, but hundreds of pieces have been passed. They include straight up post-Roe trigger bans that would ban abortion if Roe is overturned, to these little insidious like propaganda legislation that's like waiting periods, mandatory ultrasounds that are all contextualized in protecting pregnant people, but are actually about preventing access. So this is just another innovation in that. And this is particularly a terrifying one because they figured out a way around the constitutional protection of Roe. So when you hear about the Texas 6-week abortion ban, we've had other 6-week abortion bans that are unconstitutional on its face. Those have to kind of flow up through the judicial system into the appeals courts that will, you know, eventually face the Supreme Court. And we can talk about the Supreme Court in a minute. But this one actually goes around the judicial system by deputizing any private citizen from being able to sue an abortion provider or someone helping someone get an abortion. So it's like vigilantes with bounties that is just unheard of. And the Supreme Court, in the dark of night, allowed it to go into effect on September 1. So this is the disaster.
You are absolutely right. And I'm glad you mentioned that this has been happening since the 80s and probably since before then, since, you know, Roe was enacted in 1973. But there's a book called Obstacle Course, which everyone should read, by Carol Jaffe, which talks about the obstacles in every state. I mean, there are hundreds of them, if not thousands of them, that have been happening for decades, you know, like 20, 40 years, right? And abortion is effectively banned in more states than we realize. I mean, there are circumstances in this book that she lay out where women have to travel several states, you know, and they have to go through this waiting period, like you said. And so it's really important that people realize that this didn't just start happening.
Oh, no.
And the thing that's really scary about Texas is exactly what you said. They found a way to circumvent the Constitution. And I think they've created a blueprint for other states that want to do the same thing.
Oh, not think. They have created a blueprint. And I've heard rumors. There are rumblings in Arkansas, South Dakota, Pennsylvania, Michigan, Ohio, Florida, Utah, I think North Dakota, West Virginia, that are they're looking at passing this particular kind of legislation now. So I do want to take a step back. And usually I start these conversations by saying that we are talking about abortion. We're talking about Roe v. Wade and the constitutional access to abortion. But sometimes when people hear this subject, they are like, oh, that's a woman's thing. You know, it's a Planned Parenthood and Roe thing. And I want to sound the alarm to everyone listening that this is not just a women's issue. This is an everyone issue. We are talking about a overly funded anti-choice minority that has a perspective that the government has jurisdiction over your reproductive freedom, that the government has a role to say if you should remain pregnant when you don't want to be. And not only does this impact the pregnant person, which could be a woman or a transgender man or a non-binary person, it impacts the entire community around that person, the partner, the family, the dreams and wishes that folks have for their lives, their educational opportunities, their jobs, their, you know, here's the thing. 1 in 4 people who are in reproductive age and could get pregnant have an abortion, and 2/3 of those are mothers. That is a whole lot of people. And now, you know, with Roe v. Wade, you know, it does provide a constitutional access for abortion, but roughly 56% of this country lives in a place that's hostile to their ability to exercise reproductive freedom. And the fact of the matter is access has been really challenging for low-income people from day one. But now with this Texas ban, it's over for 1 in 10 people because that's how big Texas is. So you add all these other states, we're talking about 56% of this country is now in a state of reproductive coercion. So this is a sound the alarm, you know, alert all the media, invite everyone into this conversation, because the fact of the matter is, and this is the good news, 80% of this country believes that Roe v. Wade should not be overturned. We are a pro-choice nation. But because of the investment in this anti-choice infrastructure, there's been so much misinformation and so much propaganda that's made us all very uncomfortable about even talking about it. We've all been confused and inundated with images that you'll see out there in protests that are, you know, disconcerting and we hear all of these messages about, well, you know, Democrats are all about, you know, late term abortions and things like that. That's all propaganda. That's distracting from the reality of this being a foundational issue of freedom. So we are in a crisis. Everyone needs to be involved. And we actually do have a lot of power to stop that. But we can talk about what that looks like.
Yeah, but that's the thing. I think I kind of hinted at that in my first question. How do you go from 80%? I was going to ask you the number. You read my mind. 80% of the country supporting something that, you know, changes a person's life so fundamentally, and not just that person's life, but all of the peripheral people in their lives, right? The partners, the family, the community. How do you go from 80% to something like this happening where it's effectively banned? And I liken it to, you know, being like this rapidly spreading deadly wildfire. And people are just kind of like, well, it's not in my backyard yet, so I'm not in danger. Mm-hmm. Like, I would imagine that with those numbers, you know, supporting it, that people would be in the streets.
Yes. Well, what we're seeing is, obviously, we're all kind of exhausted after the trauma of the last 5 years and just all of the inundation of issues that are coming at us. But I will say what I have seen over the course of my work in reproductive rights for the last 30 years is this is a long-term investment and a political strategy that is focused on leadership development. What I mean by this is for the last 30 years, that anti-choice infrastructure, the Republican Party, evangelical churches have been insidiously elevating elected officials in state and local offices that are now in positions to make decisions and legislation. That's what we're seeing. And the judges. So it's not been like, it's like been a slow burn, right? Over the course of time, this investment in infrastructure has not been matched by the progressive Democratic Party structures. Honestly, like real talk, having been in reproductive rights and health and justice for the last 30 years, we have abdicated a lot of that to women's groups, Planned Parenthood, NARAL. It's like, oh, they're going to take care of it. Let's just write a check to Planned Parenthood and good. We're good. You know, and the fact that we've had a bunch of pro-choice presidents like President Clinton and President Obama, and Roe v. Wade is still constitutional, there's been a perspective of like, we're okay, not paying attention to the fact that there is this slow chipping away in state legislatures, and now even cities and towns are starting to pass these insidious little pieces of legislation called Sanctuary of the Unborn or something crazy. But it's been a slow chipping away over time that with also lack of media coverage in local and state legislation, we haven't really seen the magnitude of the problem. So that's why this conversation is very important, because Texas brought a little flashpoint, like you said, a fire. It's like a forest fire started, but now we get to see that the kindling has been available everywhere. And the burning has been happening. So there are 10 states already that have post-Roe trigger bans in place. What does that mean? So if Roe v. Wade is overturned, and we should talk about that in this conversation, likely will be next year, so just put a pin in that. But if Roe v. Wade is overturned in the state of Louisiana, for example, there's a law on the books that was passed in 2006 that says 10 days after Roe's overturned, abortion becomes a felony offense, $100,000 fine, and anyone providing an abortion or assisting someone with getting an abortion will be mandatory charge and sent to 10 years forced labor camp, and there is no exception for rape or incest.
You're kidding me.
This has been on the books since 2006, and that's what the trigger bans across the country say. So this has been happening for over a decade, two decades. So now we have to bring this to light. It's been these pieces of legislation are passed in the dark of night, at midnight in state legislatures. You know, that's what happened in Iowa. These bans have been happening all over the place. And now it is time for us to wake up. And it's really late for us to wake up. I'm not going to lie. We're at a place where it's quite dire, but it's time for the whole pro-choice nation to wake up and say, no, stop.
You know, I have to say, I've heard about a lot of legislation, but I have never heard about this in Louisiana. I kind of want you to repeat that again. So it's been on the book since you said 2006 or
2006.
First of all, why haven't they been able to pass this? Why is it still on the books? How does this work legally?
Oh, because it's a post-Roe trigger ban. So it's like the state legislature is put, they're called trigger bans because They are pieces of legislation that are there in case Roe gets overturned. So you have to understand, this is a strategy. This is a, like I was saying, an infrastructure political strategy that's been funded over the course of the last 30 years that includes state, local, judicial, at every level of government. And so the state strategy is to put these trigger bans in place that if Roe is overturned, abortion is automatically illegal. So they don't have to do anything after Roe is overturned. It just becomes illegal. And it's like, again, passed in the dark of night in these places that have GOP legislators that have been elected with all of this investment, all of the gerrymandering that's been going on for years. It's just an investment in infrastructure.
Right. It's all connected. You know, one of the comparisons that I've made recently was to the Supreme Court decision around Shelby County versus Holder with voting rights, right?
Yes.
When that came down, there were trigger laws, you know, all over the country that were just waiting. And I think some went into the effect the very same day, if not, maybe the next day, but they were ready. So as soon as that provision, I think it was provision four or five in the Shelby County versus Holder decision with the Supreme Court, you know, once that was taken away, they went into effect. Right. And we saw, I think the first year that we saw the effects of that was it the 2008 election or 2010?
Mm-hmm. That's right. And that you make a very important point, because voting rights and these rights to reproductive freedom are absolutely 100% parallel and tracking each other. These are tools of oppression, which is taking away voting rights, taking away reproductive freedom. And they are mapping the same strategy. So everything that's been going on in the voting rights has been going on in reproductive freedom as well. And so that is what I want folks to know. Now, Texas is particularly insidious because it's a new strategy. It's a new kind of template. But these kinds of insidious pieces of legislation in various forms, like the Louisiana one that's been around since 2006, are all over the country already and have been sitting on the books for a couple decades.
Well, what you just told me about Louisiana, they're like, to Texas, you know, hold my beer. Mm-hmm. That just sounds awful. But I do want to get into a little more detail about some of these states, like Mississippi. People have been talking about this case in Mississippi that's coming before the Supreme Court. And I think the ban would be at 15 weeks. Can you tell me a little bit more about that, the origins of the case and, you know, what effect it would have nationally?
Yeah. Okay. So this is another urgent situation. This was actually something I was stressed out to the maximum before the Texas law went into effect. So here we go. Particularly since Donald Trump was elected president, we saw an increase of states passing unconstitutional abortion bans. So what that means is that Roe protects abortion to viability 24 weeks, and then subsequent Supreme Court cases, particularly Casey in 1992, does provide some government regulation in that second trimester. So that's where you see different kinds of, they're called trap laws, but they're like insidious little pieces of legislation to regulate your access. States have been also passing unconstitutional abortion bans from 6 to 15 weeks. So a state will say, we're going to ban abortion at 6 weeks. That's what happened in Georgia a couple years ago. Iowa did it. We had a bunch of abortion bans that were passed during the Trump years. These are unconstitutional on its face. So it's a little bit of a game of chicken. It's like, here's the state passing this law. Planned Parenthood, the National Women's Law Center, Center for Reproductive Rights, ACLU, is required to sue because it's unconstitutional. So that lawsuit is passed. It goes through the judicial system, hits the appeals court. The appeals court has to overturn it because it's unconstitutional. And then it hits the docket of the Supreme Court to see if the Supreme Court wants to take it up. Now, the Supreme Court for the last couple of years have had roughly 20 cases like this, just sitting there waiting for them to decide if they want to consider it. And we've been waiting patiently, not patiently, we've been fretting instantly for years, wondering if they're going to take up one of these cases. And this year, they did. They picked up the Mississippi 15-week abortion ban with the specific question of, are any pre-viability abortion restrictions unconstitutional? ? So this is key, because obviously Roe v. Wade is a precedent, but we know this Supreme Court, with its stolen seats, with Amy Coney Barrett and Gorsuch and Kavanaugh making it extremely conservative, we know that they are a little bit loose on precedent, and that this Supreme Court actually has overturned some precedent on some other issues before in the last couple of years. So this is a precedent overturning situation. Is this Supreme Court going to overturn the precedent of Roe with this Mississippi case, with the question of any pre-viability restriction? Is it unconstitutional? There is zero reason for them to consider this case because of the precedent of Roe, but they're going to do it anyway. And the argument that I think Amy Coney Barrett and Gorsuch probably made was the situation's different now. You know, like there are more people who are anti-choice. This propaganda that's been distributed throughout the country and has been confusing people, and all these pieces of legislation that have passed and all of these bans that states have passed obviously indicate that we have more people that want to ban abortion than we did before. So you see that it's like insidious strategy that does not reflect the reality of our pro-choice nation. So this Mississippi ban is very scary. It will be argued probably between Thanksgiving and Christmas this year, and the decision could come probably around June next year.
Right. No, that's really helpful because no one's explained it to me, the process, in that much detail before. So that's really helpful. So this sounds scarier than Texas, if you can imagine that, because it would overturn precedent, right? Because as you said, Roe establishes viability at, what, 24 weeks?
Mm-hmm.
Having the question open, like, well, is that reasonable, you know, given that, you know, people, some people don't like that. It's just like saying, you know, some people now in, you know, 2021 don't like the fact that Black and brown people have equal access to the ballot. So, you know, should they have it?
That's right. Well, I mean, Roe does, it creates frameworks for limiting states' access to ban abortion or control reproductive freedom. So what this will do, if Roe is overturned, it turns it back over to the states. And that's when those post-Roe trigger bans activate.